Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, it's midnight 30 with Neutron Bomber and Captain B2, poured out thick like honey, bittersweet like molasses, seeking your proliferous journey to prefer the empathetic masses, calling on cathartic release, expel your demons, but for a moment increase and then cease them, quell their influence, let them not commit treason. Unfortunately, the captain is flying solo tonight because the Neutron Bomber is a little under the weather this evening. So I hear I have Mika riding shotgun tonight. Outstanding. Who else have we got out there?
We got a few callers lined up. We have a few callers lined up. Yeah, first we have area code 619. You're on the air, and who are we speaking to?
Hello, this is Michael Mihalas calling in to a program of poetry for the third time. Hopefully this will be the charm.
Hi, Michael. Welcome.
That means you know the third time you're not a poetry virgin anymore.
You're right.
You're a veteran now.
I'm a veteran, okay.
Yeah, you're a veteran now. A poetry virgin. Okay, who else have we got?
We also have area code 520, and you're on the air. Who are we speaking to?
Catherine, how are you? This is Rhonda.
Hi, Catherine. Welcome back.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name. Again, please.
Catherine.
I thought that's who that was. I thought that I'd recognize your voice. Welcome, Catherine. Glad to have you joining us. What else have we got, Mika?
And
anybody?
And we also have a Faziana. Hey, Faze.
Hey, Mika. Hey, Bobby. Hi, everyone.
Hey. Up there in the bleachers, huh? Sitting in the cheap seats. Okay. All righty. Well, unfortunately, like I said, Neutron is not feeling well this evening, so she has given me the helm. I have the con spock, as they say, and let me go to the inbox. And Mika, you want to start popping some poetry out there for us, please?
You want me to post links?
Yes, please.
Okay. Let me find your topic board.
I hope I didn't catch you flat-footed because Neutron sent me a note said that you were going to go ahead and do that. So.
Oh, no, she didn't.
I'm
she didn't let me know, but that's. No, she didn't
that
let me know.
Nice
that's fine. I can do that.
Okay. She sent me instructions.
Okay, let's see here.
I can't burn down the writing.
Okay.
You don't
and then, Faze, Michael, and Catherine, I don't see any poems by you on the topic board. Oh, wait, no, I did find Catherine. So, Michael and Faziana, if you had a piece on there and I'm missing it, just let me know.
No, I'm just crashing the party last minute.
Cool.
Well, out there. We like your stuff. Why don't you put something up on the board, dear?
Me?
Catherine, I have your poem up first, actually, Catherine. She was talking to Faze because Faze doesn't have anything up.
Oh,
so I was trying to figure to now. Catherine, why don't you open the show for us?
Okay, I'll do that. Thank you. This is Mustard Tree. By rite of passage, the character a mustard seed thrown by a river's flow. It was faith and it was grace and needed room to grow. It spread out like a bay tree. Birds nested in its leaves. It provided lots of shade, and because of this, it grieved. For no traveler would rest there. The briars grew up strong, so folks thought the tree was bad and tried to cut it down. But the tree had wisdom. It knew it was alone, so it called the spirit. More mustard seed was grown. So saplings grew around it. The tree became a grove. They were tended tenderly by the tall one with great love. The people saw the young ones and saw they caused great good. They sat around the great tree. At last they understood. And so the birds, they nested. The great tree was lauded. But the mustard tree told people it was not to be applauded. It had grown strong and tall. Its shadow had great length. for it was a higher power that brought about its strength. The best way to give back to it was to bring folks great to least and let them have a picnic under the mustard trees. End poem.
Great reading. Great job. Okay, let's get that's the one thing, and you can't beat a poet reading their own work. I mean, you just there's something personal and all the inflection, and you know what you were thinking when you wrote it. So that's you can't beat it. But Michael, can we start with you? What did you think of Catherine's verse?
I found it to be very lovely, a very wonderful poem. It was very enjoyable to follow along as it was being read. I'm a Christian myself, and I see the Bible being what's the word alluded to, about the mustard seed and about the tree growing by the river or by the river, and the spirit, and I mean, but it's a good poem, I think, for anyone to appreciate. And I like both the rhyming and the flow to it. It flows just like a river, and beautifully written. So congratulations.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you. That was a lovely comment.
Sure.
Faziana, what did you think?
I liked it. It seems like the tree is a person who is misunderstood and is humble, willing to provide for others without wishing any kind of applause or attention for it. I thought that was a really sweet personification of the tree.
Thank you.
Nico, what did you think?
Well, first of all, great comments, you guys. I really like your comments. But also, I was thinking, you know, it's really cool in relation to the prompt, characters like a tree and reputation like a shadow. The shadow is what we think of it. The tree is the real thing. The way that you've penned this, I think, you know, it's almost like one can't appreciate their own character until they realize how many others gather around and gain benefit from that. It reminds me of certain times in my life when I am surrounded by people who love and appreciate me, when I realize that the relationships that I've built are a testament to my character and to my own strength. And so to realize how much I mean to other people is also to realize what strength I have in myself. And so that's what I got from this ending. The best way to get back to it was to bring folks great to least and let them have a picnic under the mustard trees. You know, what you build with your character is strong relationships with those who either you help or who help you along the way. And so I felt like there was a great theme in this and a great sense of togetherness with others and reciprocity with others.
Thank you. Thank you.
Catherine, I've noticed that you cleave toward rhyme, and your rhyming patterns are always very, very even, very fluid, nothing forced about them, and you actually, you get clever in here, too. You're lauded and applauded, strength and length. You've got some great rhyming in here. And you've got, it feels like the piece has a spiritual underpinning or undertone to it. Like Mika said, Michael said, with the mustard seed, and a character, a mustard seed thrown by a river's flow with faith, it was grace and it needed room to grow. And I like the way that you told a very loving story about the tree's redemption in the people's eyes by scattering mustard seeds and creating saplings. So I agree with Mika that there seems like a reciprocity there between the tree and the people. So it's a very clever take on the prompt. Very interesting. So thank you.
Thank you. And I really do want to have people around me. You know, I do, especially other poets. It's very important to me. And it's very important to me that people realize that I am there for them.
That's very generous of you. There's a lot of synergy in these groups that we have at late night. And we have Michael's up next. Michael, would you read Forest of Dreams for us, please?
What did you want me to read?
Your poem.
Oh, the poem that I just posted. Okay. Yeah. I wasn't sure about today's topic, but when you started reading this poem about a tree, I thought I had to think of one quickly, and I remember writing a really, I think it's a pretty good poem. It's called Forest of Dreams. And, of course, you need to see the forest for the trees. Right? So the total scene. One moment. Let me get to that page. Okay, this one is called Forest of Dreams. Within the forest of dreams, a weeping willow cries. When I hear its haunting song, it brings tears to my eyes. Willows weep, but oak trees laugh and sing a slew of psalms, feel the rhythm of the wind, the swaying of the palms. Pine trees dance, tickle my nose as I remove some cones. I can hear the breeze create whispers of many tones. I appreciate each tree right down to all its roots, sing a song of sycamores and play the drums and flutes. In this forest of my dreams, each tree spoke out to me. Every leaf erased my grief, inspired poetry. Poems from a daydreamer who hopes for a good name, a good reputation is greater than wealth or fame. In this forest of my dreams, let your worries decrease. I found solace in its songs and have an inner peace.
Great reading. Let's get you some comments. Catherine, would you like to open a comment?
Oh, that was beautiful, Michael. The inner peace that comes from knowing that you have a spiritual background, and that really does reflect in the poem also, as you said about mine. That inner peace is something that, you know, no amount of anything can buy, you know. It's just, unfortunately, I don't have the poem in front of me to read because I'm not on the feed currently. I'm not on late night poetry, and I'm looking at the actual site, and I can't find the poem. But I heard it, Michael, and
okay.
It's absolutely beautiful. The rhythm and the rhyme are exceptional, and I will find this poem and read it. Okay,
well, thank you so much.
I heard it. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. That's
a great comment. Athasiana, what did you think of Michael's book?
I really liked how much emphasis there was on the sounds of the trees, like the musicalness of the way that the air goes through it, the different kinds of leaves, and it was fun when it tickled the nose. But really, the fact that so many of the sounds and the rhythm of the trees was emphasized, I really enjoy, because I do love the sounds of the forest. And, you know, you don't notice these things when there's other outside noises, but when you're in just, like, the silence of nature, you can notice all of these little things. And I thought it was very observant and kind of embraced the different senses.
I had a phase, Anna. Thank you. Mika, what did you think of his work?
I have to echo your sentiment, Faziana, about the sounds. And I really loved this second stanza with the willows weep, but oak trees laugh and sing a slew of psalms. That is a really pretty way of talking about the sound that the leaves have in the wind, to sing a slew of psalms. The alliteration is beautiful. The biblical kind of reference to the poetry, I think, was beautiful. And I just thought it was lovely how you use sound in the poem.
Thank you, Mika. Great comment. Great comments, everyone. I enjoyed, you have a very smooth cadence to this, and your reading emphasized how smooth the cadence was of your work here. I appreciate each tree right down to all its roots. Sing a song of sycamores and play the drums and flutes. Each in this forest of my dreams, each tree spoke out to me. Every leaf erased my grief. Inspired poetry. A beautiful way you introduced that in there, that the sound of the trees and nature were inspirational, and it goes hand in hand with the spiritual underlying of the piece. It's very, very well done, and I couldn't help but think of Wild Dove. Luyu, she loves nature poetry, and she would have probably really, really enjoyed this. So, okay, well, thank you for that great reading, and thanks for the great comments. And let's look at you. You are up and running here. What a woman. Okay, real tree. Shit. Well, I wouldn't know what to do without Mika. I'd be sitting here talking to myself. It loses its charm after a while. Okay, we have a piece by Old Sarge. I'll go ahead and read this. It's called Reality. People want to lurk in your shadow, never seeing the real. Gossip and innuendo is sweeter to them than seeing the fruitiness, the fruitfulness of your reality. Let them wallow in the darkness. You keep working on your roots, which sweetens your fruit. For those having eyes to see the strength of the tree, which is reality. End poem. And let's get Old Sarge some comments here. Catherine, what did you think of it?
I have a little dog barking in the background, so...
And another country is heard from.
I thought it was a wonderful piece, and I'm getting it up here. I just unmuted myself here. So it is true that, you know, you have to really work on your roots, and that is where the strength lies, is in the roots, okay? You know, and people will think what they want, and they will, but, you know, if the tree is bearing fruit, if it's being fruitful, then people will see that, and they will, you know, change their minds, perhaps, about what they're seeing and what the reality is of the tree. But it has to be those who have eyes to see. And that's a biblical reference, I believe. I believe this person, Old Sarge, is probably a very spiritual person, and he sees the strength of the tree, which is reality. And I think it's a wonderful poem and very well done. Thank you.
Thank you, Catherine. Great comment. Michael, what are your thoughts about Old Sarge's piece?
Yeah, I like the last four lines. You know, just like the previous reviewer said, for those having eyes to see the strength of the tree, which is reality. And I believe what the poll is trying to say is that the roots are, although you can't see them because they're underground mostly, that of course is a foundation of the tree, and the fruit is a result of the rest of the tree. I mean, it springs forth as a kind of like a cause and effect type thing going on. That's kind of like what I got from it. And I do like how it does allude to good trees and trees that are darker or you know what I mean? Because a good tree cannot produce bad fruit, and a bad tree cannot produce good fruit. Only a good tree can produce good fruit, and a bad tree can produce bad fruit. So I'm thinking about that part in the Bible that says that. So I was like, okay, wow, another biblical reference that I derived from this poem. Spiritual minded, and I liked it.
Interesting how people are deriving all these biblical and spiritual references from a quote by Abraham Lincoln. That needs exploration.
Yeah.
Faziana.
Yeah.
Thank you, Michael.
I too was drawn to the root part. Focusing on the roots enables, in order to have the sweetest fruit. I think it's saying, like, don't obsess about the surface, like how pretty your fruit is. Think about what is important deeper inside, and that will lead to better fruit. Your inner beauty will lead to the outer beauty if you focus on what really matters. It seems like a nice metaphor.
Comment, Adriana. Really like that. Thank you. Mika, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I really like the way that this validates you, if you're going through one of those struggles where you have sort of those little nagging voices all around that seem to want to tear you down. Gossip and innuendo is sweeter to them than seeing the fruitfulness of your reality. So it doesn't matter what you do. You can't make these people happy. They're looking for something negative about you, and they're looking to tear you down. And you just have to let it really let it roll off your shoulders, because those who have eyes to see the strength of the tree, which is reality, will understand your value. So it's a good, I think, a good parable for letting go of people's opinions who just aren't even willing to acknowledge reality. Like, it's good to be self-aware. It's good to understand, your weaknesses, but also there's a confidence in saying, I'm not gonna let everyone talk over me and invalidate me, when those who actually look at me for who I am see that I'm a person of value.
Great comment. I like the way what you've seen. Thank you. I enjoy the I like this brevity. It has a lot of very sound philosophy in it. See, and the title, very clever, reality. Gossip and innuendo is sweeter to them than seeing the fruitfulness of your reality. Let them wallow in darkness. Keep working on your roots, which sweetens your fruit. I agree with you, Mika. There's a metaphor in here for holding true to yourself and strengthening your own personality, your own convictions, and that will bear you out in the end. So great piece of philosophy from Old Sarge. Thank you, Old Sarge. And what do we have? Are so speedy. Look at you. Okay, here we go. We have Witchia mirabilis grow downward. Aha, botanical name. And I was prepared for that. So, Aphasiana, would you like to give this a shot?
I'll try. Let's see if I can pronounce it. Why Welwitschia mirabilis grow downward, by Blayton B. Rain doesn't pour over all plants equally. That's why some seem to stand strong. When the world looks at them, they admire their strength and sometimes their beauty. Many other plants try to do the same thing. They reach out for the sun, trying to be noticed, while their roots fall short of water. Many plants perish because they would rather be seen than to live their lives for a natural purpose. Deep in the desert of Namibia lies a plant that is not easily seen. It grows downward, trying to hide from the sun's spotlight. The Welwitschia mirabilis seems so weak, not worried how it is seen by others. They fulfill a duty to invertebrates and truly show that they care. They lie flat on the surface with their roots running deep. You can't easily pull them out because their character is too strong. End poem.
Great reading. Thank you. And Michael, would you like to start off the comments, please?
Yes, I like the visuals of this poem, what was being conveyed by the poet about this interesting name plant, Welwitschia mirabilis, I guess. I'm somewhat interested in botany, you know, in plants and plant life and flowers and stuff, but it was pretty expressive
you should look up the plant name. I've just looked it up. I got curious.
Okay.
And it almost looks like a succulent, but it's very large. Mm. And it looks like someone stepped on it. It's got these huge broad leaves, and no trunk to speak of. It looks like someone hacked off the top of a pineapple and stuck it in the ground.
Oh.
Except it looks like they stepped on it. Yeah, it is interesting looking. It really is. But my goodness, but what a wonderful piece to write on this. And thank you for a great comment. You'll have fun looking at that. Catherine, what did you think of it?
Oh, I thought it was wonderful. I didn't look it up. I think it's a succulent, isn't it? The Welwitschia
mirabilis. Sure looks like it.
It's probably a succulent. My father was a master gardener, and one of the plants he loved were succulents and cacti. And a plant in Namibia would not want to have the sun shine on it. It would want to stay low to the ground, and its root system would be would proliferate. I think this is a very wonderful piece in that it talks about, you know, how in order to help other plants too and help yourself, you have to kind of adapt to your environment. And, you know, not all of us should be in the spotlight, you know. Some of us, in order to help ourselves and to help others, need to be low to the ground and to be humble, you know. Humble plants there are a lot of them, especially in the desert. And I live in the desert. Oh, I know.
That's very, very harsh conditions.
Thank you.
Yeah. I lived in the desert for 6 years. I lived in the Mojave. And
oh,
you're right about that. Yeah.
Right.
Well, that was a wonderful comment. Really, really enjoyed that. Mika, what did
Thank
you think
you.
Of please.
Yeah, I also had to go look up the plant. I like that, you know, he kind of was spotlighting how it looks like something that you would just pass over.
Yeah, it does.
And it's something that, you know, it almost looks dead even when it's basically perfectly healthy, because the leaves fray into, like, these stringy ropes. But it's all for a purpose. It's all to adapt and survive in the environment that it's in. And so those of us who don't look like we're thriving, but we are adapting and surviving in the environments that we're in, I think he's giving us a shout out here. Also, before you move on, I want to let you know that Jeff has joined us.
Yay! Welcome, Jeff.
I'm Jeff.
Hi. How's it going?
Well, better now that you're here. Hey, did you happen to hear the piece that was read?
I heard the end of it, and I read through it, and I kind of concur with everything that was said. It's a tribute to, you know, there's kind of a message in what he's saying, and he does it in a very in a very soft way. You know, this plant has deep, deep roots. So, yeah, it don't look like much, but you can walk over it. You can trample on it, but the roots are deep, and it's going to survive and continue on. And so it's the real thing. That's what I gathered from the poem.
Great comment. Amika, did you get the chance to finish your comment?
Yeah. Yeah, I made my comment before I brought Jeff on.
All righty. And Afasiana, you read it. What did you think of it?
I love it. Blatant Bees, one of my new favorites, and it's because he always combines, like, knowledgeable stuff that he actually teaches you something in, like, every poem, and philosophy. It's like he's teaching you about this plant that I'd never heard of before, and yet he's kind of talking about how deceptive appearances can be, and how this plant, rather than seek the spotlight, is helping the animals, the insects, the other plants, and it's because it's not trying to be, like, out there reaching for the sun. It's smarter than that, and it knows to look for the shade. I don't know. I thought this was a really intelligent piece, and it has both the science and the philosophy, which is kind of what Bee is getting known for. He has that perfect mix.
I've noticed that he does like to introduce a bit of philosophy into his work, and along with nature, and it's a very pleasing blend, and this one is the same. And I agree with what everyone has made, some great comments, and it is this Mirabilis that he's talking about. It is a great metaphor for people. We don't seem like we don't seem like we're flourishing, but we are in our environment, and we just need a shot at showing people that we are flourishing. Otherwise, we get passed by. So it's a great piece, and some very useful wisdom is in there. Okay, and we have. Let's see, I'm confused. We've got two pieces up here. We've got The Real Thing by Swan Song. Okay. Mika, would you like to read that for us?
Only if Jeff is unable to read it himself. And then, Michael, just so you know, the poems that are read on the show, they have to be put on the topic board. So the chat room is good for whoever's posting the rights for the show. But I'm actually going to bump the topic board up, and it's called, Late Nights with the Midnight Bomber, Abraham Lincoln Reputation Quote.
I didn't
if you have any further
Michael's,
rights,
okay.
Michael, just put those on here. Oh, no, you're fine. I just want to let Michael know, because he put his first piece on there and then another one. So just there's a topic board, Michael, if you want to put any further rights on there. And then, Jeff, are you working tonight? Are you able to read your piece?
I'm able to read. I got a day off. I got a day off because I broke my truck. So
for once,
you said what to who?
I broke my truck. The axle broke. Just going over a really, really hard area, and it just hit just right and snapped the axle. So they're putting a new one on as we speak.
Oh, that is not an inexpensive proposition. I was going to ask you your oil pan.
None. No, the oil pan's fine. I mean, it happens out here. This is trucks come here to die because it's just really super rough country, and you know, we just go out and tear them up and make money. So that's what we do.
I tell you, Jeff, that sounds like the title of your next poem. Trucks come here to die.
Yeah. Well,
just read your real thing for us.
What's that? Okay, I will. It's called The Real Thing. I sit and watch water tumble over smooth-worn rocks. Tall trees with their scarred boles lean over the stream, rippling with its constant song. A small woodpecker drills into a pine, and a bluebird holds an insect in its beak and flies to its nest, stirring the young babies that open their yellow beaks and bleat with their timid songs. Then cuddle close into each other's warmth and fade into the sleep of growth. These are real things, tangible, made with strong love, as real as the scent of larch needles and pollen from blue lupine luring you into Elysian fields, for the rest is long and refreshing, and the earth below is solid. When we concentrate on real things, it grows within ourselves, and we become true to others, the strong wood that builds bridges where many can cross over. End of poem.
Great reading. I think I even heard applause in the background. Okay.
Thanks.
Get you some comments. Miko, why don't you start off the comments, please?
Oh, man, this is just a beautiful piece. As always, your nature imagery puts us directly into that world. Just to hear the sweet bird songs and kind of hear the brook babbling, I feel like it's just incredible how you're able to transport me whenever I read something of yours. I love this part in particular. These are real things, tangible, made with strong love, as real as the scent of larch needles and pollen from blue lupine luring you into Elysian fields. It's just an incredibly uplifting piece, Jeff.
Thank you.
Rich, good comment. Faziana, your thoughts.
I have to agree with Mika. I mean, I love the nature imagery. I can picture the little baby birds. I really love the reference to the Elysian fields because that's like the Greek mythology kind of heaven, right? I think.
Yes.
Elysian. Yes. Okay. I'm like questioning myself now. But yes, I thought that was a beautiful reference and some really nice nature imagery.
I appreciate it.
Comment. And to answer your question, yes, Elysian is relating to a characteristic of heaven or paradise. So yes, you got that one right on. And it is a great reference. I enjoyed that. I enjoy that stanza also. These are real things, tangible, made with strong love, as real as the scent of larch needles and pollen from blue lupine, luring into you into Elysian fields where the rest is long and refreshing and the earth below is solid. A great, great stanza there. And I also enjoy your writings are always very rich in your nature descriptions and depictions. You write some wonderful word paintings, your descriptions of the nature around you. Many times we've read your pieces on the show, different shows, and you've transported us to wherever you are with your descriptions. So very nicely done on this one, and a great interpretation of. But let's get you, Catherine. What?
I appreciate it.
This is a truly wonderful piece, and you know I used to go to Red River, New Mexico, and I would get lost in the woods. And this describes that perfectly. You know, the real things, tangible things. And I love the way he mentions the young babies that have their yellow beaks open. And there's a little bit of alliteration here, too. They talk about, he mentions the yellow beak and the bleat of the timid song. And I love the last stanza. When we concentrate on real things, it grows within ourselves. And we become through to others. The strong wood that builds bridges where many can cross over. That is beautiful. And I really liked it very, very much.
Yeah. I appreciate
very
it.
Well done.
I was gonna ask you, have you been to the Chama River in New Mexico?
Yes, I have.
Oh, I love
yes,
that area.
I have.
That's pretty. Yep. That's a,
oh,
I love New Mexico.
Yeah. I slid down the natural slides in that river. Remember. Yeah, that was a beautiful trip.
Land of Enchantment.
Yeah. Indeed.
Let's not leave out Michael.
Yes. Hello.
What do you think?
I like how the poem opened. A good opening obviously invites the reader to get into it, you know, and I like how it opened up, and I like the imagery with the birds and the trees and certain plants I never heard of either, that was really cool. I really enjoyed following along with it. I was just going to ask, the title of the poem is called The Real Thing. I noticed that what does that mean to the author? The reason why it was given this particular title.
Basically, it kind of comes down to, well, you know, you go through life, you know, we all, a lot of people focus on the things that are ephemeral, worldly things or, TV shows, music, things of that nature. And to me, the real things are what's in nature. I mean, and that's kind of what I took out of the quote is that the real things are strong and they stay, you know, the birds stay, they come back every year. The pine stays, the woodpecker stays. And these are the things that you focus on, and in that you reach a solidity within yourself. And if you're solid, then you're the real thing too. So you can be better for other people, to help them or just to maybe make their day better. Who knows? You know, but that's what I took from. That's what I meant to express.
Well, thank you for that insight.
Thank you for that great question. Great question. Okay, let's. Mika, before we get caught up in things, I know we have a finite amount of time. How much poetry do we have to cover? We have quite a bit?
Yes, we still have poetry to get through.
It
may be that we have room at the end for the second poem, but we have...
Right. 'Cause what I was going to suggest that since we do have We are rich with callers tonight, poetry. I think I'll just keep the comments to two or three comments for each poem. I hope no one minds, but that way we'll get through a lot more reading, and people will have a chance to hear more of other people's work. So let's move along to Tree and My Shadow by Chris Bond. And Michael, would you like to read this one for us?
Sure. It's called Tree and My Shadow. Solid and dependable, longevity and non-expendable, unlike the shadow that comes and goes, ebbs and flows, depending on whether the sun makes an appearance. Solid and pragmatic, stoic and non-dramatic, it has firm roots, the shadow doesn't give a hoot, its whole existence rests. Depends on whether the sun makes an appearance. That's it, right? Okay.
Great read. Great read.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's get Chris Bond some comments. Faziana, why don't you start us off?
I love the end, that like the perspective that creates the shadow is all about the sun. So no matter what the tree is like, people might not see it in the same way if that sun isn't present. So there's this kind of dependence on external factors where your situation influences things. It's not just, you know, what you're born as, or I feel like it's almost like a nature versus nurture debate, but your surroundings influence the way that you are perceived. I thought that was an interesting thing to ponder. Because I'm like the first to comment, I haven't really fully processed it myself, but that's just something that I'd like to think about is how perspective is affected by external factors.
A very insightful comment. It is. Thank you. I appreciate it. I didn't see that in there, so I'm glad you said that. And Catherine, let's get your thoughts about this.
I agree with Aficiana. I think this is this poem is, you know, there's actually, I don't know what they call it, but it's a mark before, depending on whether the sun makes an appearance. On both stanzas, there's a little mark before that. And I think that he's emphasizing that point, you know. Really, it doesn't matter what the shadow, whether the shadow is there or not. The tree is there no matter what. It's solid and pragmatic, stoic and non-dramatic. It has firm roots. The shadow doesn't give a hoot. Its whole existence rests depends on whether the sun makes an appearance. So,
right. The refrain is it calls attention to the fact that the shadow is inconsequential to the tree, and it's all like Faziana said, it's all dependent on external factors. So great comment, great point you made there. And let's get one more comment. Jeff, what did you think?
Oh, I like this. He starts off with solid and dependable, longevity and non-expendable, meaning it's important. It's long and it's important. Trees are important or non-expendable. They're something we really can't do without, but they're long. They last forever. Unlike the shadow that comes and goes, ebbs and flows, depending on whether the sun makes an appearance. And in a way, I kind of see him comparing himself, you know, I'm a shadow you know, or the shadow is something that depends on external factors, sun, time of day, clouds, different things like that, where the tree is solid and pragmatic, stoic, non-dramatic. That means it's not going to get flustered. It has firm roots. The shadow doesn't give a hoot. The shadow don't care. It's shallow. Its whole existence rests, and then he finishes out with depends on whether the sun makes an appearance. It's really true to the quote, and it's simple, simple comparison, kind of a parallelism, really, but or a juxtaposition in a way. I'm trying to find the right word for that, but it's very good, and a nice clear message and good solid poem.
Thank you, Jeff. Great comment. Okay, let's see what Mika has put up next for us. We have A, interpretation. An interpretation. Okay, there it is. Okay, Catherine, we haven't had you read for a while. Would you read for us, please?
What is it called?
An interpretation.
What is it called?
A interpretation by Christopher Frange.
Okay. An interpretation by Christopher Frange. The reflection we see in ourselves differs from the perspective of someone looking at us from afar. Just as the title of a book reveals an abundance of the story, so does the reputation of one reveal, self-reveal a part of who they are as a person. End poem.
Great reading. Thank you. And let's get Christopher some comments. Mika, what did you think?
I really like the philosophical way that people have approached this prompt. And I like the dichotomy between who we are, who we truly are in ourselves, and what people see us as. You know, he's kind of playing on the don't judge a book by its cover when he talks about of someone looking at us from afar, just as the title of a book reveals an abundance of the story. So does the reputation of oneself reveal a part of who they are as a person. So there's some truth to what can be perceived from the outside, but it's only scratching the surface, and there's a lot more underneath.
Great comment. I agree with you. I think there have been some very interesting interpretations of this Lincoln quote, and this one doesn't make any references to nature or trees, which I find a nice, a refreshing change, because this is where this quote took this author. Is, like you said, don't judge a book from its cover. Just as the title of a book reveals an abundance of the story, so does the reputation of oneself reveal a part from who they are as a person. Interesting. That, like you said, very interesting philosophy in this brevity. And Michael, what did you think of it?
I like how it opened up in the first sentence. I like how it starts with the reflection that we see often the reflection we see in ourselves, differs from the perspective of someone looking at us from afar. It's true. Sometimes looks can be deceiving. So perspective versus reality is kind of what...
Yeah.
I kind of see about that. What else? An interpretation. I'm wondering why it was, here I am again asking about the title. I think the title's good, but I was just wondering why it was called an interpretation, but it's just me.
This is pure speculation. It could be because that was, he is interpreting that quote differently. Others, but could be that.
What,
you know, again.
Okay. I guess One thing I didn't check to see what the program's topic was going to be. Is there a way that I can find out in advance what the topic of the program is going to be?
Look at the poem. To the right of the poem, you'll see context. And it says Abraham Lincoln quote. And this particular piece written for the quote that a neutron bomber put out there. And it is Abraham Lincoln quote, character is like a tree and reputation like a shadow. The shadow is what we think of it. The tree is the real thing.
Oh, okay.
Neutron was looking for everyone's take on that particular quote. So, righty. Well, let's see. Who else have we got out there? We've got, oh boy, I got to read this one. Pink Fairies, advice from my third grade teacher. It's going to be interesting. Okay. Advice from my third grade teacher by Pink Fairy 5. Parading in the outliers of my mind, unkind rumors told about me. Let me start this again. Tripping over myself here. Parading in the outliers of my mind, unkind rumors told about me because of my faith. Haunting my nights when I used to cry myself to sleep because I was them and they were me. My third grade teacher gave me this advice. When they get to know you, they will know you are not your family or their past. Be you and true. Sad and blue is for others. Live your real until they understand. So I grew to be me, moved away, had a fresh start. People who knew me for me, not me for what others had said or done, it is refreshing to get a new start. I am rejuvenated. I am refreshed. I am me. End poem. That's Pink Fairy. She has the most charming way of bringing personal experience in on the page, and it just laces the philosophy through it so adroitly and so beautifully. So, Afasiano, let's get your opinion of Pink Fairy's piece.
I really like that she touches on how when you move away, you can kind of restart yourself and be judged by you in that moment, in that version of yourself, rather than be bogged down by like past like rumors of your family or something like that. And I think this fits the quote because the quote talks about how there is the perception, like the reputation, and then the actual thing. And I think that if she was kind of tainted in people's view by the reputation of her family, then to be seen as she actually was, she did need to get out of that particular garden and be planted somewhere where people could see her for herself. And I think that was a nice fresh perspective on this. And it's about getting that fresh perspective and being appreciated for yourself and who you really are.
Great comment. Great insight into this. I also agree that this was a refreshing interpretation of the quote, taking it from a personal note and how it reflected on her and what other people thought of her based on her associations. The genetic crapshoot, as I call it. You can't pick your family, unfortunately. You're right. She moved into a new, different garden and reestablished herself and felt more like she was being appreciated for who she really was, not who she was associated with. So, Mika, what did you think of this piece?
I really love reading about the kind of person, like the teacher who sees that this person is going through a real crisis and is going through pain due to abuse by their classmates
or whatever. I have a few people in my life who were that for me, who were encouraging and who helped me set my chin and, you know, and be able to face another day because I did have that one supporter. So I really related to that. And I like that, you know, this third grade teacher was perceptive enough to see the issues that were going on and to build this person up.
Great comment. Jeff, what was your thinking, Miko? Jeff, what did you think?
I wrote in her thing. I said this is a very compelling narrative. Be you and true. Sad and blue is for others. Live your life until they understand. That's a turning point. You know, what the teacher said to her, and what I'm sure was a turning point in her life. And I can see how it fits the prompt in a very original way. But I love the open narrative style that she used. She always writes unique poetry, and this is no exception. So it was good write.
Great comment. Yeah, her work is very insightful. I'm always interested in what she has to say. So, okay, thank you, everyone. Great comment. Let's see who we get to read next. And, Nika, what have you got for us?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I checked the
call. I'm sorry, you were on break, weren't you?
Apparently.
That's okay.
Okay, here it is.
Here we go. Peter Solway. Nika, would you like to read Peter? He's a strange ranger.
Absolutely. I hope I will not butcher it. This is by Peter Solway, and it's called Rhyme of the Ancient Listener.
It will give it a wonderful read, I'm sure.
Thank you. Okay, Rhyme of the Ancient Listener. Detained on random street corner, well-dressed reader, compelled wedding guests of America, forced to listen, stand still. Like Jesus in Ascension on television. Like the Pope on last innings morphine, George Pell fully confessing, younger than 10, boys and girls. Late night in the tomb, robbed morning, headache like Vietnam never concluding, powder of tiger imported back home in Alabama. Man down Maine, just seen him, bronze quoting, rain and shine, the weather, whatever, he is there. Squall and lightning, Abraham Lincoln, character at odds with tree, he reckons, modern democracy, like Coke and Cola reality. The real picnic, Colombian woman inhaling 100 degrees Caribbean, but green character, smooth naked limbs, blessed by cool nothing, boxed skin, Beethoven's wounds. Alabama existentialism, sunburnt professor drunk again, locking COVID out, let her scream, blunt as woman, blood on linen, all dark meaning to hang, cough with gas masks on, gas at final horizon. Still chewing that dated brand, Sartrean spitting a poet's income, no oasis promised, like Rimbaud, Sahara charades, done in a fierce can, go to flames, sands of incineration. Old oak of shade, brethren, friend of a small town audience, listening content to our historic rest in remembrance town. St. Lincohen's that Sunday to chime. Man down Maine saying no need of rhyme, reasons, discriminations, proclamations in carved font, dark lips not moving. Shade to have her reasons, gamble of nothing, shirt off back, camel licked, and palm.
Great read. And I know that was a challenging piece. And I tell you, what goes on in Peter's brain, it must be really interesting in there. Okay, I'm going to throw this up for comments and do the best you can. Catherine, what did you think?
I'm drawn to what he's talking about, Man Down Maine. I think he's talking about The Man on Main Street. No need of rhyme, reasons, discriminations, proclamations in carved font. Dark lips not moving. Maybe he's talking about, you know, we talk about, sometimes poets are very floral and we're very talking about things that possibly we don't really know. But he's talking here about Jesus on television, Jesus in Ascension on television, like the Pope on Lost Innings Morphine, George Pell fully confessing younger than 10 boys and girls. Perhaps what he's talking about is the reality of Man Down Maine. Just seen him, bronze quoting, rain and shine, the weather, whatever, he is there. You know, he's the reality. He's a man who is, you know, and no matter what else is said, all this, you know, people in Alabama talking about things they don't know about, you know. But he's black, he's back home in Alabama. Maybe that Man Down Maine is back home in Alabama, you know. I don't know. It's very, very difficult.
Don't feel like the Lone Ranger, Catherine. Yeah, don't feel like the Lone Ranger. Peter challenges all of us quite a bit. I think he speaks fluent metaphor, and unfortunately, I don't speak that dialect of metaphor. And I find myself reading and scratching my head over some of his visual imagery, which is quite pictorial. I mean, it's textured, it's very rich, but sometimes it is beyond me. I sometimes feel like a dilettante when I read Peter's verse.
It's beautifully written. Really, it's beautifully written.
It is. He's quite eloquent. He's quite imaginative, but sometimes he's elusive. I would say more than sometimes, he's rather elusive. So, I mean, because you read The Real Picnic, Colombian Women Inhaling 100 Degrees Caribbean, but green character, smooth naked limbs, blessed by cool nothing, fox skin, Beethoven's wounds. I'm sure there's something in there. I just, like I said, I feel like a dilettante when I read his work. Michael, would you like to share your thoughts with us?
Okay. To be honest, it was a little hard for me to really follow and appreciate it. I wish I could, you know, elaborate more on that.
No, that's okay. Believe me, I have said the same thing you just said. I've said that's a great thing.
I don't like to criticize poetry. I'm sure this has a message for someone, but I don't understand a lot of this, a lot of the words and stanzas used. I'd love to maybe get into the head of this guy, Peter Solway, and ask him, you know, what this poem means.
Why don't you? You could always dash a text off to him and start a dialogue, because I tell you, he does write some very challenging pieces. If you look at some of his other works, some of them are very straightforward, and some of them are just very challenging in the message that he's delivering. So don't feel bad. Don't feel like the Lone Ranger. If you don't get, I said more than once.
Yeah.
It's like we've tortured Peter enough, and we've tortured ourselves enough. Move on. Okay, Cola. All right. Okay, let's see. I don't think I've read in a while. I'll tackle this one. So we have The Golden Rule by Kolop. Can a reputation precede one when one's shadow should be as a humble and faithful servant should to follow and serve? Let character be that which is imbued with universal value, for good cannot be misconstrued for anything else but good, and evil holds no linguistic nuances, embodies all that can harm. For those who are hearing impaired or even speech impaired, and even the slightest can feel evil, will shiver to its malevolent presence. Let that character be moved by a mission forged towards a greater good that rises beyond his personal petty needs, and care not for all the naysayers whose wagging tongues just point their fingers and cast hearth stones, destroy reputations like breaking bones. For they walk in the valley of darkness with no shadow to follow them. They covet those that carry on oblivious of criticisms, for they have a mission to realize, a personal story. It's not about ego. It's not about themselves, for the world is made by the leaders and the led. They are incarnate with a vision that despite the woes that this can bring, may they be quartered or tied to a stake, they function on a simple truth, tried and proven, and can be summed into one sentence: treat others as you would like others to treat you. Perhaps if everyone who has any character can apply this golden rule in his daily affairs, then there would be more peace in mankind and respect for the environment. End poem. Wow.
Yeah.
That's Kolop. Yeah. So, Mika, start us off with a comment, please.
Absolutely, I will. First of all, this is amazing, right? And I love Kolop's writing in general, especially when she responds to a prompt of this, you know, the sort of philosophical bent. With her own philosophical meanderings, which are so good, it's hard to comment on them immediately. But what I will say is I have to disagree with Kolop in one thing. For good cannot be misconstrued for anything else but good, and evil holds no linguistic nuances, embodies all that can harm. Good can absolutely be misconstrued for something not good. And I think that's one of the major problems that we're having today when she's talking about you know, the golden rule of treating others like you would treat yourself, and also respecting the environment and working towards more peace in mankind. I think the problem very, very specifically is that good is misconstrued as evil, and evil is packaged and sold as good. And the point that she makes about our intuition being able to hear this and to feel it, you know, those kind of intuitions can be so atrophied from lack of use, from lack of critical thought, that they almost disappear into non-existence. So I love Kolop's right, and I love the sentiment with which she writes, but I would say to her, you know, I don't know, I guess I disagree with that point in the poem.
Great comment. And you don't have to agree with everything someone says. I firmly believe that when you've got a group of people, if they all agree on everything, then only one of them is doing all the thinking. But that's just me. Okay. Jeff, what did you think of this piece?
I kind of read into it sort of a message to what's going on politically today. I think there's been a lot of turmoil from COVID to elections to protests to things burning down and all that. And I think that, you know, she kind of gets down to the bottom of treat others as you treat yourself. I tend to agree with Mika in the fact that I don't think that things are quite black and white and stuff. But I did enjoy the way that she wrote her poem, and she presented her case. It's not about ego. It's not about themselves, for the world is made by the leaders and the led. That states something to me there. And to me, it kind of reads into the leaders are the world is made by leaders and the led, kind of meaning, you know, if we're going to go along with some of this stuff, we better be careful what we go along with. And that's what I read into her poem. But overall, it was a good, insightful write, and I like where she went with it.
Comment. Thank you. I also enjoyed it. I agree that the passage that everyone was talking about, that good cannot be misconstrued for anything but good, the first thing that popped into my head was the old proverb of the road to hell being paved with good intentions. So that duality it does exist, unfortunately, and sometimes things that start out bad can end up good if one is very, very lucky. But the passage that I landed on, I care not for all the naysayers whose wagging tongues tisk, 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 who point their fingers and cast first stones, destroy reputations like breaking bones, for they walk in the valley of darkness with no shadow to follow them. They covet those that carry on, oblivious of criticisms, for they have a mission to realize, a personal star to follow. And she talks about people being true to yourself, true to themselves, and which I think, depending upon your environment, can take a lot of courage, because sometimes if people don't understand it and tend to try and either disparage it or discourage it or crush it. So I agree. This is a great piece, though, but I think she's motivated by, I think, what we're all tired of seeing, people being ugly to each other. And but the COVID, this whole COVID thing, actually, there's been some ponies in that pile of manure, and some of them are people being being quite humane to each other. And it just reminded me something that happened to me last year. I dialed a wrong number because I was trying to call the local grocery store to see if they would deliver. And the number I dialed, she called me back, and she said, she asked me if I needed any help. Could she go to the grocery store for me? I didn't know who this woman was, but here she was, reaching out to a fellow human, trying to offer a helping hand. So every once in a while, you know, that'll surface, and it's refreshing when it does. So great piece of work, Cola. Thank you. And we have Birds in the Shade by Inner Sanctum. And let's see. Aphasiana, let's hear your dulcet tones, please. Would you?
Birds, of course. Birds in the Shade by Inner Sanctum. They stand around me in the shade of my reputation, spreading rumors about the quality of my bark and the number of leaves they've heard I shed. They laugh at my inability to bear apples or oranges, though I have never been a fruit tree. Their gullible eyes view me, but do not ever see me, for I have strong roots and mighty oaken limbs, and the shadows I cast are just a silhouette of the foliage, a reputable life that goes unnoticed by tweeting birds in the shade. Mm-hmm. And Paul.
Superb reading. Great, great. Well done. Okay. And I know you read it, but I'm interested in what you might have thought of it.
I really liked it. I like how they talk about people kind of whispering about, like, you know, they're not even producing fruit. And it's like, that was never my goal. I wasn't a fruit tree. So, you know, I don't know. I really like that. It's like, get your expectations right here. Like, that's not what I'm trying to do, so don't judge me based on that. And, you know, the quality of the bark and the number of leaves and just being judged for the things that this tree is not even interested in that. Like, that's not the tree's purpose or role. And I love the attitude of this. It has, like, a spark to it that I feel like I want to be friends with Inner Sanctum. Something about this, I really liked its vibe.
It has a colloquial flavor to it almost, but it is beautifully written in an anthropomorphism. I was going to say anthropomorphize, and it wouldn't come out. Anthropomorphization. I can't do this. The personification of the tree. You're thinking in the first person of the tree, and I like what I agree with you. They laugh at my inability to pair apples and oranges, though that has never been a fruit tree. That was never my goal. And spreading rumors about the quality of my bark. People speaking opinions that have no basis in knowledge or fact. They talk about superficialities, what they see without knowing the full truth of something. That you can't bear apples and oranges, not taking into consideration it's not a fruit tree. And then I love the last stanza, that it goes unnoticed by tweeting birds in the shade. And she just, it dismisses all of these naysayers and negative opinions who don't know of where they speak. So I agree with you. There's a great piece here. And, Jeff, what did you think of it?
Oh, this was the personification was stunning, and this, I don't know if any of you guys have read some of her other work, but this is really an awesome poet. Can you hear me?
Yes. Oh yeah.
Hello. Hello.
Yeah.
We can hear you.
For some reason, she's really quite a poet, and I love that that line where they look at there with their gullible eyes, they view me but do not ever see me, so they don't see the real her, and for I have strong roots and mighty oaken limbs, and the shadows I cast are just silhouettes. I mean, that's just beautiful poetry from the word go. It's a stunning poem, and she has the gift of being able to say an awful lot with just a few words.
She has a great use of brevity and metaphor. She's very agile with metaphor.
Yep.
I agree.
She's very
great comment.
Really, really a very good writer.
Yes, she is. Very good comments, everyone. Okay, how are we doing for poetry and time? We're coming about 32 minutes left, so I'm trying to keep an eye on this.
Yes, we have 32 minutes left and four poems, and then also Michael was kind enough to drop another write as well. So I think we're going to be pretty good. So let me post up the next one, though, for you.
And if we have time, maybe I'll throw one into the mix. Who knows?
All right. So that next now.
Okay. Chloroplast. I love it. I hope no one minds, but I'm going to read this one because it already got a scientific bend to it, and being a science, having a strong science background myself, I cleave to this. Chloroplast, corpse, especially Luke J.R., I will point out for those of you who may not be acquainted with his, he's fairly new. I think we're about 6 or 8 weeks into having his work show up regularly. But if you notice, his list of pieces right next to his work is more by Luke J.R. He has an interesting device that he uses on his titles that I find quite fascinating and very clever. They both start with the two-word titles. They both start with the same letter. And if you read his pieces, those references are contained in his work. I think it's very clever. He's got some complex pieces here. I'm sure this one is no exception. Chloroplast, corpse, chloroplastic, plastic, rooted within the shades, shadows of the gnarliest of roots, shriveled up in a shallow vessel, cocooned boots, taller than the branches that reach out for salvation, light enters the cursed edges of their foundation. No nation is stronger than the trees that climb each day. With every waking hour, the roots grow deeper than we pray. There's a shadow within the rustled leaves of hollow viper, next to the corpse that was shaded by the Pied Piper. There's no darkness beneath the undergrowth. The ungrowth light travels through the soul of those who awoke too late. A shadow of doubt on the walls of this old cabin, amongst a corpse, hasn't stopped in and in. Inside the inn that was eroded from the corpses of many, a tree becomes hollow. Bark becomes bite. Wood becomes paper, sharper than the flesh that once slid off bone onto the raspy voice of those who may atone, whether it's transformation from the light to the synthesis of nights. Clouds form the openings that reduce the breadth of winged men. Sweeter than the sugar that was once driven from the mines, machines unraveled from the beginning of our times. We may think that the tallest tree has the shadow of many arms, but their branches are just beginning to be torn off in old tree farms. You may say it does not feel pain. It grows alone, wanting to avoid propane. But instead, man is vicious, and the trees become paper like our tissues, used, thrown away from the moment they have been used. No wonder mankind has so many issues. Don't doubt the corpse that stood beneath the tree with a hollowed-out apple. Blame the worm that's embedded in the brains of those who are unstable. Perhaps that's the same blame that could only bring us shame. But if you were a shadow amongst a tree, would you ever think the same? End poem. Wow. Oh, boy. He didn't disappoint. This has got to be one of his more complex pieces, and effectively starts out with scientific terminology, and then plunges me. There was no lack of philosophy in this one. So, Mika, I would love to hear what you think of this piece.
Well, I thought there was a lot of depth to this. I think my favorite part was, don't doubt the corpse that stood beneath the tree with a hollowed out apple, blame the worm that's embedded in the brains of those who are unstable. I thought there's a lot to this, right? But I think just that, I think, you know, kind of a description of, I'm taking it in a couple different ways. I'm taking it as a description of, you know, the way that mental illness is treated in America. I'm not sure about other countries. You know, the blame falls upon everything but the system's failure to help people who need help. And I'm also taking it as, you know, not seeing a person just for the action that they do, but also for the determinism, all the actions that came before that allowed them to become the person that they were, that followed them, that haunted them, that created the person that acted out in the way that they did. So I feel like there's a talk here about how many factors really go into making a person who they are and influencing how they act.
Great comment. Yeah, this one's, I agree with you. This is a very complex piece. There's a lot of deep meaning in this one, that this is one of those pieces that needs to be savored and read repeatedly, because it's one of those pieces that each time you read it, you'll see something different. Michael, what did you think of this piece?
I enjoyed reading it. It was like, I gravitate toward a lot of poems that use good imagery and also kind of have a like a natural theme, but this also got into a little bit of a like a scientific thing going on.
Yes.
If I can recall, chloroplast is an organelle. It's within the cell of a plant, and that's what gives it its green color. That's where we get chlorophyll from, right?
Exactly right. Exactly right.
Obviously, without chlorophyll, the plant would die because how could a plant or a tree or whatever metabolize basically the oxygen and carbon dioxide that it takes in?
Photosynthesis.
That's the word I was thinking about. There you go.
I told you I have a science background. Yeah, it's challenging. It's challenging. You're right, though. It does have some nature to it, some philosophy to it. It's a very very layered piece. Did you have a particular part that you liked and especially that spoke to you?
I like the it's in the second stanza. It talks about the synthesis of nights, or it says whether it's transformation from the light to the synthesis of nights, clouds from the openings that reduce the breath of winged men. That's an interesting line, actually, though, the winged men. I'd like to know what that means, but it's okay. I mean, it is what it is. It's a good poem. I enjoyed following it, and to the best of my ability. And Luke is pretty good.
I would to me that the winged men refers to Daedalus and Icarus, and their ill-fated flight. Daedalus being warning his son Icarus not to fly too close to the sun, lest the wax that held their wings together melt. And unfortunately, Daedalus, being the young man that he was, didn't listen. The wax melted, and he plunged into the sea. So it was ill-fated, and so maybe the clouds from the openings that reduced the breath of winged men could be a reference to the fatal flight of Icarus. So,
well, that's pretty insightful. Wow.
You don't want to live in my head. It's crowded in there.
Hey, I think me and my personality agree.
All righty. So how are we doing on poetry and time? There we are. Okay. We've got Chloroplast and Corpse Down by Luke. What else have we got to read?
Including this poem, we have three, and then the one that Michael posted. So I think we have enough to fill our time.
Yeah, I have one that I wrote the other day for a contest. If we have time, I'll throw that one in there since we seem to be talking about nature. Okay, who have we got next?
Next up, we have Rob Azza, Past the Roots.
Okay, have you posted that yet?
Yes.
Okay. Let me refresh here. I'm not getting any cooperation from my page. Okay. Oh, I love how when you refresh, oh, there it is. All of a sudden, everything rearranges itself. Okay, all righty. Jeff, would you care to give this a read for us?
I'll give her a shot. It's Past the Roots by Rob Azza, or Rob Azza, one word. Bear your way past the vines, past the roots, past the bark that hides my inner self. Uncut free the hanging fruit, the builds with suit, with shadows, with shallow uncertainty, then release your blade from its leather sheath. Let it angle its way into the heart, into the mind, into the soul of the trunk. Surrounded by Whitman's fallen leaves, protected by Abe's grave branches, hidden beyond distant shores or a naked face, covered in yet another season of forgiveness. End of poem.
Reading. Very well done. Very well done. Not familiar with this poet. Mika, are you familiar with Rob Ezra?
Yes. Yep. He always writes really amazing stuff. I'm really glad he entered this contest.
Share your thoughts with us.
Absolutely. I really like the way that he brings us along with him. You know, there's this sense of peeling back the layers, especially in the beginning, that's very visceral. And cut free the hanging fruit that builds with soot, with shadows, with shallow uncertainty. And that, I think, is a really a standout image of the hanging fruit that builds with soot, with shadows and shallow uncertainty, like the inner person that's so vulnerable at that point when you get past all of the armor, all of the trappings and the facades that we build for ourselves, that inner person. There's something beautifully soft about the ending as well, about kind of the release that comes from having someone see you, even if they reject you, from knowing that it can't become anything more than that. You've already exposed yourself. You can't. I guess there's no going back from that point, and it builds strength. And to say a naked face covered in yet another season of forgiveness. I think that's a beautiful way to talk about the forgiveness you give yourself or the forgiveness that you feel from others when they do accept what they see. So
great comment. Great insight. I agree that the ending does have a gentleness to it, surrounded by Whitman's falling leaves, protected by Abe's gray branches, hidden beyond distant shores, the naked face covered in yet another season of forgiveness. Beautiful references to Walt Whitman and a reference to the quote, to Lincoln. So, Catherine, what did you think of this piece?
It's beautiful. It really does, like, it implies here, you release your braid from its leather sheath, let it angle its way into the heart, into the mind, into the soul of the trunk. I mean, we really don't know anybody based on their outer self. We have to really delve into what makes that person who they are. I mean, their background, their education, and all of that. They make them who they are in a sense, but a person is more than that. A person mm-hmm. has a trunk, has a root. And I love how he talks about forgiveness. Because that really, you know, when you get to know a person in their inside, you have a tendency more to forgive their outer self, if I'm making any sense.
Yes, I agree. They're people tend to surface and the artifices and the superficialities, and don't realize that the people are very complex. They're layered like onions. And sometimes you just got to keep peeling until you find out who the person really is. Because very often, and I know quite a few people, it's just they put up defenses. What you see is not who they really are because they're protecting themselves. So I agree, and you made perfect sense, and I think it was a great comment.
Thank you.
Okay. And we're closing in on, we got 15 minutes left, and who have we got? After Past the Roots. By the way, I want to publicly thank Mika, because without her skilled technician help here, I would be sitting here talking to myself. Okay.
Thank you.
But it,
well, next up,
believe me, I do it with regularity. The only problem is I both win and lose all the arguments. So schizophrenic, and so am I. Okay, what lies with... You just got that, huh? I cannot take credit for that. That's out of that's from an album by Styx, Mr. Roboto, and one of the songs says, "Don't try to hide it. You don't like try to hide. I might try. I'm schizophrenic, and so am I." I always loved that line. Okay, what lies within the character of a person? By Little 20. Trees have a soul, and they are strong and beautiful if watered well and taken care of. A person is a loving thing that some couples can only wish for. We should place a lot of nourishment into the soul of the child. When you grow up, I want you to be strong and beautiful that you were made to become. Feed your soul. Enrich your flourishing mind. Watch who and where your peers take you. You may not be popular, but you will be safe. Be true to yourself. Remain authentic. Remain honest. Speak what is inside your heart. End poem. What a beautiful brevity. Michael, would you like to share with us what you thought of Little 20s? Here's.
I like how this poem opened up with saying that a tree has a soul and is strong and beautiful. Well, of course, we have to take care of the tree, so to speak. Water it well and take good care of it. You know, it's the nurturing and of it that speaks volumes about how important we have to take care of it. And I like how the last four lines ended the poem. To be true to yourself, remain authentic, remain honest, and speak what is inside your heart. It sums up what this poem is trying to say. You know, it's a good summary, and it brings everything back to square one from what it says at the beginning to what it says at the end. So, and it needs good brevity with, you know, economy of words, and I really liked it.
Great comment. Faziana, what did you think of this piece?
I think it's really great, like, advice on how to live your life. It's something that I could see you saying to a child that you're raising. It's talking about nourishing the soul of a child and giving that advice of, you know, being authentic and not worrying as much about popularity as about, you know, finding some peers who are good for you and who you connect with honestly. I thought this was excellent in its meaning.
It is. And the message, not only for a child, but something that can be repeated to someone and even ourselves throughout life, because I know along the way sometimes we tend to drift off course. And if we remind ourselves of some of these things, we tend to get back on track. At least that's the way I think of things. I tend to try. And the trouble is I speak what is inside my heart with annoying regularity. And it's not always taken well. I have to learn to apply more diplomatic balm. So, okay. And we have Living, Babbler, yes. Okay, we have Living Wood by Babbler. Okay. Catherine, would you read this for us, please?
Okay. Just a moment.
Sure.
Could you find another reader, please? I'm trying to find it here, and I'm having some trouble.
Can you jump on this one, please? Oh, that's quite all right. Mika, would you read it first, please?
Oh, I'm sorry. What?
I've got it. I got it up if you want me to read it.
I've got it. I've got it now.
Have a volunteer. Go ahead.
I've got it now. This is Kathy. I've got it. Living Wood by Babbler. A tree is mostly dead. A skeleton of limbs and trunk. Hunkered bark over hollow tubes of wood. The heartwood, dense and rigid, holds no life. A scaffolding, giving shape and bearing to two tiny cellular layers. Cambium and folium. Rarely given structures, secreted away in great trunks, are all that breathes in the monument of a tree, tucked into dense, visible armor, hums the trickle of a soul buried in a forest.
Great read. Thank you. Great read. Okay. Jeff, would you like to start the comments?
Yes, very creative poem. Kind of a statement of facts. The tree is mostly dead, which is true. Mainly the structure, you have the cambium layer and the inner phloem layer that secrete brings the juices and all that up into the leaves and stuff like that. But what I really loved was the last part of it, of the poem, was that tucked into dense visible armor hums the trickle of a soul buried in a forest. I think that was tied the whole poem together. It made it it made it full circle. And overall, it's a lovely poem. It's a lovely train of thought.
It is. It's and interestingly enough, how she's taken the botany, the science of the tree, and introduced it so beautifully into this verse. And you're right. There's only those, and we forget that when we look at a tree, we forget that most of it is dead, except for the cambium and the phloem. And if you girdle a tree, it dies, because those two layers are in underneath the bark, and you cut off the lifeblood of the tree, and tucked into it hums a trickle of a soul. And that is beautifully said. Mika, what did you think of this piece?
I am so sorry, Bobby, but I have something going on outside of this. Can you skip me on this
certainly
one?
Certainly can. Certainly. Faziana?
Like both of you said, I really love the ending. Tucked into dense, visible armor hums the trickle of a soul buried in a forest. And I think that can sometimes be true of people, too. You know, you have those walls that you build up that give that outside layer of, strength, or, like, pretending that everything's okay and trying to fit in. And then there's that little bit of you that's really, like, your essence. And sometimes that's hidden away and maybe not as noticeable to people. I thought this was a beautiful response to the prompt.
Yes, and we've had some very creative, very imaginative interpretations of that prompt. One of the reasons of this website, and I love listening to how different poets view the universe. I find it captivating, intriguing, and very educational. I see things through other people's eyes that I never would have thought of myself. Okay. I have no filter. Thank you, Faziana. Faziana has written me a little note. My housemate, who is a gentleman of the old school, I will blurt something out, and he'll look at me and shake his head, and he'll say, Bobby, you have no filters. And I'll grin broadly and announce that that's part of my charm. So anytime someone says that to you, Faziana, you have no filters, just smile at them happily and say, that's part of my charm. Well, Mika, are you back with us?
Yes, I am. I am. I'm going to post this other piece by Michael, unless you wanted to put your piece up, Captain.
Good. Let's go ahead and read Michael's, and I'll throw mine in the mix here.
Okay, Michael, your second piece is up now, and it's ready for you.
Okay, thank you very much. I wasn't sure if I could, read a second one of mine on the same program, but thank you. And before I read it, just to let you know, this was the first poem of mine to be featured on the front page of this website.
Congratulations.
I was very happy about that. I don't like to blow my own trumpet, but just letting you know. This one is called Fruitful. Fruitful. When I'm at the produce section, I'm amazed by the selection of the kinds of fruit to buy. They're the apple of my eye. Be fruitful and multiply. Crates and boxes to the sky. There are so many I have bought, from the peach to apricot. Nothing rhymes with orange, you see, but berry rhymes with cherry. I'll make fruit juice by the gallon, pineapples and watermelon. Pair a pair of pears for me. Mangoes, plums grow from a tree. Yes, tomatoes are a fruit, but not carrots. They're a root. Avocados all the time. Try it with a squeeze of lime. Olives, figs, bananas too. Papayas are good for you. Grapes and guavas, nectarines, grapefruit, dates, and tangerines. Fruit won't grow on other planets. Try these local pomegranates. Jackfruit, lychee, starfruit too. Look what sour sauce can do. All fruits have vitamin C, sweet or tart, fresh from the tree. Be fruitful and join the hype. Don't eat fruit that's not yet ripe. Even lemons can be missed. Put fruits on your shopping list.
Very well done.
Oh, that was delightful. That was very much in the flavor of Edward Lear or Ogden Nash.
Thank you.
So it had that whimsy about it that was very delightful. So
yeah, thank you so much. I'm glad you liked it. I was really
very much
really
so.
Happy that I was featured 2 years ago on this front page.
Okay, and we're getting down to the last couple of minutes, so I'm going to throw mine in there. And I did this for one of the contests, Life as a Mountain. Starts with a quote, be like a mountain, aim to touch the sky, but stay rooted to the ground, by that famous person, Anonymous. I was born as the mountains thrust into being, originate amid upheaval, conceived of earth, water, air, and fire. I rose up tall and proud, a pinnacle, an apex, a summit, replete with steep slopes, jagged ridges, sharp peaks. The wind of change buffeted my surface, created crevasses, turned my sharp peaks and jagged ridges into rubble. The torrent of life aid cascaded over my surfaces like a cataract, wearing my rough face, smoothing and rounding my slopes. Life and change eroded away much of what I had been, plundering great chunks, small nuggets. Yet I have been transformed by nature and circumstance, and the change was accepted without question or regret. My time and season has gone, still I am content. I have existed in harmony with nature and life, knowing that the only relentless, unremitting constant is change. And we just ran out of time. How about that for a well-timed show? Start to finish. Mika, so much for all of your help. Baziana, Catherine, Michael, Jeff, thank you so much for calling in and sharing your work and your comments about other people's work. And don't forget, we have contests out there by some of the other late night poets, so please go investigate them. And on that note, I will say good morning to everyone, and I am going to go to bed. Good night.
Have a good night.
Good night. Great show.
Good night, everybody. Good night, Catherine.
Good night.